New episode of the Life with Andres podcast coming up. Thank you for listening. First and foremost, thank you, Gladys Rodriguez, for coming on board and sharing a little bit about what you do. It's an important topic for me for multiple reasons, from the standpoint of the coaching that I do and the conversations that I have with clients about mental health and just what are the requirements for someone to reach out and talk to a professional about. Is there a specific, you know, topic, or is it a specific point in your life that you need to reach out to someone? So first and foremost, thank you for taking time to share a little bit about what you do. But I'll give you a couple minutes to introduce yourself.
I'm excited to be here. My name is Gladys Rodriguez, and I'm a mental health therapist. I have my own private practice in South Seattle. I work virtually right now, but I'm dedicated to providing mental health services to just about anyone. My specialty is in perinatal mental health, meaning pregnancy, trying to conceive, postpartum. But in doing that specialty, I found that a lot of people had histories of trauma. And so following that specialty, I decided to gain a lot of training in trauma work so I could help those struggling with PTSD, anxiety, depression, and things that just continue to show up despite, you know, accepting this happened to me, but it's still impacting their day-to-day or their relationships. And so, yeah, I work with a lot of women, a lot of professionals, a lot of children of immigrants. I do have a good amount of men as well. And it just shows that, yeah, people are kind of buying in and accepting that mental health is important, and it affects everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, you can pretend like it doesn't, but we all have a brain, we all have a mind. And so just like you can ignore your physical health, you can do that with your mental health too, but it probably won't be for the better.
Mm. And I'm glad you made that point, right? Because I think, you know, one of the things that as we were going back and forth trying to figure out, you know, what should this first podcast be, you know, when we talk about mental health, because we know it's such a broad subject for one, but we also understand that, you know, that there's multiple layers to it. So how do we, you know, layer it in a way to where people understand the most important parts of it? So for me, one of the things that I deal with when it comes to clients and in my coaching business is just the simple fact of, like, why is therapy necessary? Why is it, you know, again, like I said early on, why is it that someone would reach out and want to discuss or talk about things with a professional?
Yeah, I think there's various reasons. It could be you have something very specific going on in your life. I'm going through this breakup, or I moved to a new city and I'm all alone and I thought this is what I wanted and yet I'm not feeling it. And so it can really range. But for me, I think the number one reason is to get to know yourself, to understand your feelings and emotions. I don't know about you, but no one when I was growing up taught me how to understand my emotions, to identify them, to identify my automatic thoughts. And by automatic thoughts, I mean, let's say I decide I'm gonna try to get some job and they don't even call me back for the interview. The automatic thought I might have is, see, I'm not good enough. There's no point. And so if we can assess these automatic thoughts, like I'm not good enough, we can decide, well, is this necessarily true? What else could have taken place? Maybe someone more qualified applied. Maybe they're really busy and they just haven't even called candidates back.
Right.
You know, there's so many other possibilities. But when you form these beliefs about yourself, often at a very, very early age, 0 to 7 years old, they kind of show up like muscle memory. And so if we can create a space where we can map out our experiences, our emotions, and really get to know ourselves and the way our brain works, it's going to impact everything around us in a positive way. Our relationships, our focus, our energy levels, our motivation, our ability to reach goals. And so if we can simply create a safe space where you can be vulnerable and really understand your emotions past angry, mad, and sad. Those are the ones we usually are really comfortable expressing and right. know how to express. But if we can understand the other emotions that might be hiding behind that, it kind of sets you up for success.
And I've seen that. I've seen that, you know, when clients reach out and they're frustrated because they can't seem to move past a certain point in their life, right? And as we have the conversations and dig a little deeper, it always comes up, and I think it's the majority of people, right? We all have something. We've all encountered something in our life that has affected us in, if you want to put it, a negative way, right? To now, anytime that situation comes up, we revert back to that without even knowing that we're reverting back to that. But that initial thought of just, well, wait a minute, I remember at some point I tried to do this or something similar and I wasn't able to accomplish it. So now, without knowing it, I'm actually only giving like 40 or 50% because I am already preparing myself for not being able to do it again. So when we talk about, at least when I talk about this stuff with clients, it's always from a place of there's a reason for this. There's a reason why you feel you can't do more. There's a reason why you feel that, I mean, even if you're talking about relationships, there's a reason why you feel that you won't find anybody. And so many of those things come into play. Obviously, it's the experiences. And if we don't, you know, the importance of being able to discuss those things and in a way bring out the root cause, but more importantly, being able to say, this is what happened. And a lot of the times, it's not even really your fault. That was just your environment. That was just the place that you were at. That was your own like personal experience. And we hang on to that so much because obviously it affected of us in a negative way, whether we were sad or depressed or, but like, how do you get past that? And one thing I wanted to ask you is when someone gets to that point and they say, you know what, there is, I don't know what it is, right? But it's not just a sad feeling. It's not just a frustrated feeling. There's something a little deeper. Is there a specific conversation that should be had or with oneself to say, maybe now I think it's time to reach out to have a discussion with someone else? Or like what's that line that one gets to and says, it's time?
So there isn't a line, and that's what's amazing about therapy. It is, so beneficial to have that time and space. And so therapy can help you with preventative work. So if you notice, ooh, I'm starting to not want to hang out with my friends. There's this amazing band that I love coming into town. And even though my friend got me a ticket, I don't really feel like going. You're noticing that you're kind of going in this direction, right? That's the best time to know to decide, you know what? Let me figure out what's going on, because our negative coping skills will probably take over. And similar to not understanding our emotions and feelings, if that wasn't taught to us as a kid, we probably weren't taught how to positively cope with things. And so as a kid, usually this is where these negative coping mechanisms might form, right? And so if mom is too busy to deal with my emotions or stress or whatever I have going on that I want to talk about, and I learn, oh, let me just go grab a brownie, let me go grab a cookie, that's going to feel great in that moment, long term negative impact. But in that moment, it's going to help me cope with these negative feelings that I'm confused about. And so I don't think that there's a set time where, things are bad enough, okay, let me call a therapist. I have a lot of clients that stay in therapy after coming in for something very specific, and they say, I enjoy having this 1 hour a week or every 2 weeks where I can map out my life, make it all about myself, have your undivided attention and support, and I can be really honest. Because yes, maybe my brother's supportive, but maybe he's used to me being the strong one. And so I might not want to admit to him that things aren't as pretty and perfect as they appear. And so when you have this relationship with a therapist that, has your best interests, understands how the brain works and how behavior and changes work, it's gonna positively impact you. And so I recommend that the second people recognize that they're not happy with their life, they're not happy with their decision making or their behaviors, or that they're just noticing their mood is it being impacted, that they try to get that support. And if it's not accessible right away for them, that they try to learn a little bit about mental health and do what they can on their own until it is accessible for them.
And I'm glad you brought that point because I was just talking to a friend yesterday, and he was talking about the struggle or sometimes the inability to open up. And from a standpoint of, like, I know I feel off. And you know, for me, for my clients, the first step we do is, like, what feels off? Because they register, something is off, so now I have to reach out for help. And there are clients that at some point say, I think I'm good. Like, I'm good. Like, I don't need this anymore. I feel strong enough in where I'm at. Then there's the other clients that share the same thing that you say, which is they tell me, you know what? It's not even more of trying to reach for something specific, but these weekly check-ins now provide one thing that's the most important thing for me, and that is that as long as I show up to these check-ins and do whatever it is we discussed that I was going to do or continue in the path that I'm going, I can go to sleep at night feeling comfortable that I'm doing everything I can to be the best person possible. Even just that, like, even if we're not striving for another job or another business or another, like, specific goal, it's just the maintenance of feeling secure that you're doing whatever you can to be there mentally, emotionally, and obviously physically, because they all combine at some point for the people that mm-hmm. I love, right? So many times we look at it as a temporary thing. Like, well, I'm struggling with this one thing, so I'm going to go get help for this one thing. And then once I figure it out, I'm good. And yes, some people can hold on to that for a certain amount of time, but then there's the people that, like, if they don't learn from those systems or their processes, or, you know, in this time, you know, in this topic, like, leaning into those feelings and emotions, then it's going to come back up at some point. Mm-hmm. I've actually had clients reach back out after they've left and say, I actually feel bad reaching back out because at one point I felt that I was okay. And now even just saying that makes me feel like I failed, or it makes me feel like I lied to myself and I wasn't okay. And like I was having the conversation with my friend yesterday, I said, look, we need to understand and we need to make a point, very, very, like, important point, and set it in stone that we're not supposed to be perfect. That even if we learn something, doesn't mean that we've learned everything about that. If we're talking about our mental health, if we're talking about just one person's being, you're going to go through your whole life not knowing everything about yourself, right? So what tools can we get to, again, make sure that we're at least maintaining a certain level of discipline and mental health and emotional health and all that to make sure that we're doing the best we can every day? For him, the topic of reaching out and the difficulty of reaching out is strictly based off of the stigma of, first, I'm a guy, right? And as a guy, we're supposed to carry everything. We're supposed to just say, I got to figure it out. We're supposed to say, like, I'm good, right? Which is the typical answer. And I'm guilty of that myself, right? Coming from someone that struggles to ask for help, I sometimes find myself in that place of, man, if I would just have reached out to someone earlier, their experience, their suggestions, their opinions would have helped shed light on what I'm going through. And the most important thing for me when I reach out to someone is the simple fact of just knowing that someone else is going through something similar to me makes it better. I might not even get the answer, but if I just know someone else is at some point in their life said, oh man, I used to struggle with that too, and this is what I did, or, oh man, I'm actually struggling with that right now. Now I just feel better. It doesn't find the solution, but at least it doesn't make me feel like I'm the only one. It doesn't make me feel like I'm the one that's failing or not enough. So when we talk about the stigmas, and you have way more experience in this than I do in this realm, but, like, what is one way that someone can, I don't want to say remove the stigma, but how does one get comfortable with acknowledging that I just need someone to talk to, right? How does one get comfortable with saying, how, you know, what steps can I take to feel comfortable with it? As opposed to, like, right now I'm blocked off. It's a stigma. It's always been looked at as a negative thing. But what can I do to make sure that I feel comfortable with reaching out?
You know, I think that you have to buy in at least a little bit and start that relationship with a therapist. But the beautiful thing about therapy is it can go at the pace that you need it to. And so if I, as a therapist, identify that you've never had a strong support system, whether in childhood or adulthood, and you've been kind of used to only scratching the surface, the second you feel any, like, icky feelings, you might go work out, you might go have a six pack of beers, you might get high, you might go do some crazy behavior that will get your mind off of it, right? And so if I see that you are very far from being familiar and comfortable with facing what's going on for you and how you feel, I'm going to take my time to like build that trust with you. And so people aren't always the most honest. They're a little unsure that is this person really not going to judge me when I tell them how I really feel or these thoughts I have about myself or about my family. And so as you continue to sit in that relationship with a therapist, you will feel more comfortable and a part of you that might have been scared to open up that can of worms will see, oh, this is different. This is actually a safe space. This therapist didn't get rid of me when I said that I believe X, Y, and Z. She actually is just as excited to see me as last time. Here I was, nervous to show up to the session. I thought she'd look at me differently. And so I think that, once people, even the first session, I noticed people really feel relieved to just be able to vent to someone that has these characteristics of being validating and empathetic and not minimizing. Often in real life, people will say, oh, I'm just so stressed and I'm sad about this. And people will say, don't be stressed, don't be sad. Let's all get our mind off of it. Come on. It's okay. Just things could be worse. You could be going through this, you could be going through that. And so that might show the person that, see, it's not safe to tell people how I feel. Whenever I do, they try to rush me through those feelings, or they say it's not that big of a deal.
And I'm guilty of that. And even just, with my wife, the immediate reaction is if I say it's not that big a deal. In my mind, I'm saying it as I'm not doing it to harm. I'm not doing it in a negative way. Just my initial reaction is just I want you to remove that feeling or whatever you're going through as soon as possible. So obviously for me, it's just to say I don't think about it, right? Or it's not that big a deal, or it is what it is, or it could be worse, And those aren't coming from a place of being mean or trying to not validate the emotion, but it does register that way. The power of the subconscious thinking, right, comes into play so much because, again, for me, subconsciously, I'm trying to help. And this is my way of helping is by saying, it's not that big a deal. Or, why are you making such a big a deal of it? It's not even that big a deal, right? Like all those things. And for someone that's trying to process that and looking for that space, whether it's therapy, whether it's coaching, it could be validated as, I don't care. Right. And I'm glad when you mentioned the creating the space, because that's all I've really said, right? For my coaching business, it's a space to where we can have a conversation. A lot of the times it's not even really me saying like, this is what you need to do. It's more of like through the conversation, a lot of times the client themselves will say, man, I literally just said what it is that I need to do just by talking about it. And I think it all starts with that space because they don't have that space anywhere else. They don't have that space to openly share things, whether it's going to sound silly, it might sound stupid or dumb to them for whatever reason, right? But through those conversations, a lot of these things are brought up in a way to where now things are actually registering. And when we talk about, coping mechanisms, I want to touch a little bit about that because we're in a place now. And in society where there's this kind of like this tug of war, right? Between you should just be happy with what you have. And then there's this other side of, no, you have to go for more. And there's thousands of quotes out there, right? That it's like, if you're not growing, you're dying. If you're not, and some people, right, they go through this time in life where it's like, I need to just be. And I need to just, and yes, do you register that as, I just need to be happy with what I have, right? I don't always have to be going for more. We have a bunch of people on social media, especially, talking about like just constantly going for more and more and more. And, they have their morning routines, their evening routines, and they're doing, according to them, 10,000 things a day. And that's the only way to be successful and all that. So when we talk about coping mechanisms, what's your take on, for instance, I've heard this 1,000 times where it's like, I had a rough day, I got to go get a drink. Or I had a rough day, I got to go to the gym. What place do those coping mechanisms have to where it can be that fine line of a negative thing or a positive thing, right? Because obviously letting off some steam helps, but does it help long term? Going to have a drink because I had a rough day helps, but how does that Like, what's that? Is there a fine line, more importantly, I guess, from it being a negative thing or a positive thing?
So I think that coping skills, they can serve different purposes. So distraction is really helpful if right now is not the time and place for me to deal with this stress that I'm feeling. For example, let's say that I get a doctor's call that says, "Hey, we think you might have something serious going on. We need you to come in for further testing." I'm in the waiting room and I'm starting to go down this rabbit hole in my head. What if it's cancer? What if it's this? Who's going to take care of my child? Oh my gosh. And it's just going and going. My anxiety is getting worse. I'm starting to sweat. I'm starting to feel overwhelmed. This serves me no good purpose. We haven't done the testing yet. I am going a million steps ahead when that is not necessary. And so, if I want to be able to be present during this doctor's appointment, I need to be able to be grounded and present. And so, a distraction technique would be, let me look around the doctor's office and count all the things that are blue. Okay. After that, all the things that are red, or I might count backwards by threes. So 100, 97, 94, 91. Enough for your brain to be distracted about these thoughts you're having. So then you can ground yourself, maybe do some deep breaths, and then decide, okay, how do I want to present for this appointment? I want to make sure I ask these questions. Let me write them down on my phone right now. This is great. And so in that scenario, a distraction is great. But if this is a reoccurring issue that I have where I'm always, feeling like I'm not good enough, going to work out, it might help in that moment and it has great benefits. So I would never say that working out is a bad, coping mechanism, but you still need to process why that's coming up for you. When did you feel like that for the first time? Oh, I never even thought about that. Okay. So let's think about it. I don't know, maybe when I was like in middle school. Okay. Do you remember even an earlier time that you felt that way? Oh, well, when I drew that painting and I showed it to my mom and she said, "You think this is good? Really? That's your best work?" Oh, I mean, if you're five and your mom says that, this is a person that like cares for you, is supposed to be validating. And so if this is coming from the most important person in your life, you might believe it, especially at five. And so it's important to, I believe, in therapy or even alone, develop a toolkit of coping skills that you reach for when you are going through something, because one drink here and there is fine. But if you have a bigger issue, is one drink going to be enough in that moment to make you feel better? Because, it is a depressant. And so you might in that moment feel great and relieved and the stress might go down a little. But long term, not good for you, and it actually probably will only make you feel worse.
And that's when, we talk about, like, no matter what you do, right? If there's a deeper issue, no matter what you do, that issue is still going to be there the next day. There's people that go down that road of, well, I'm just going to go have a drink, which turns into five or six drinks, and then now they're, drunk, passed out, and that obviously, again, made them forget whatever they're going through. But as soon as they wake up in the morning, it's still there. The importance of being able to process and have that toolkit, right? And being able to say, okay, I'm feeling this way again. What can I do? Is it reaching out and talking to someone? Is it going for a walk? And really, is it journaling? Is it, deep breath work? All that type of stuff, right? Because so many times we feel that there's only one or two options to process something. And if we've been exposed to someone that, oh, well, as soon as I feel this way, I eat. Or as soon as I feel this way, I go and train. Now, we will never process the things, and we will think that we're getting better because we went and did that, whether it was eating or drinking or training. And then we revert back to it the next time it pops up. For my clients that struggle with even just what they consider discipline, it's like, I don't understand why I can't stick to this for more than a week or two. And as we peel back the layers and we go into, well, first off, like, what's the why behind it? Like, why do you even want to do this? And so many times we fall into this trap where we're doing it because someone else is doing it. There's times where they actually, it registers. Well, I started this because my friend's going to start it. And it's like, okay. And if you don't have an attachment to it, if you don't have your own personal connection to it, then you will struggle to maintain that moving forward. Unless it at some point clicks and says, I actually enjoy this, right? But there's a lot of things that people are doing nowadays that they really don't even enjoy, but they're just doing it because someone else is doing it. Or they're doing it because they've seen someone else use it as a coping mechanism, and they feel that if they do it, they're going to get that same release, when it's not, right? Because they haven't registered at that. Like, they're actually just doing it because someone else is doing it. And for them, even though it registers as it, again, the process hasn't been gone through, so it's going to pop up at some point. And, you know, I have clients that they can pinpoint back in their childhood when certain things happened, and they've, you know, done whatever programs in the past to try and get past it, but it's almost being used kind of like a Band-Aid instead of like a cure, or instead of like I fully understand and I'm aware that this is what caused me to be this way, and these are the steps that I've taken, and this is the result of those steps. And very few people can actually identify those steps. And when someone can identify the steps, to me at least, in my opinion, like, you really haven't gone through the process. Because the steps, like, just like if something were to break right now and I tell you, oh, well, yeah, go buy this and then just fix it, without telling you, go buy this and then do this and then do this, you're not going to learn how to fix it. It's more of like just a theory than that hasn't been proven. The next topic I want to talk about is, I have clients that coach with me and also have a therapist. I have people that believe that a therapist and a coach can't coexist, that one serves both purposes, that one can't serve both purposes. And I'll share my opinion first, and then obviously I'll let you share yours. But for me, I definitely believe a coach and a therapist can coexist, because I've not just in theory, but I've experienced it with my clients. I definitely do believe also, though, that there needs to be an understanding of the capacity, more so from a coach. Obviously, a therapist has way more of a capacity, in my opinion, has way more of a capacity once we start dealing with traumas or triggers and stuff like that. But from a coach standpoint, I believe they can coexist, because if we can be very, very clear and definite on what the purpose of each of us is, then more is better. So for me, with my clients, we're very specific on the fact that, yes, we will have some discussions, because it has to happen, right? Like, well, I'm feeling a little down, or today's just been kind of a rough day. We can kind of pinpoint some of those things. But me as a coach, I have this line where it's like, I know for a fact where my experience and my understanding and my capacity reaches its limit. And then I have to say, you know what? I think you're best suited to go and find a therapist. I actually have a client right now that stopped coaching with me, and it was more obviously on the financial side of things, where it's like, man, I can't do both. And for me, it's like, you've coached me for a while and had great success, but there's still this one underlying issue. Now she's with the therapist, and now she's had a parallel growth on that side of things. Now she's starting to understand a lot about her childhood. She's starting to understand on how to release some of those beliefs that she had. If there's a coach out there that would want to hold on for ego purposes, or fear that that client might not come back, right, if they go and go with a therapist and have great success, then that's where you got kind of get into that shady conversation of like, well, then, like, what are we really doing? Like, is the best interest really the client's success? Is the best interest really the client's emotional, mental, and physical health, which it should be no matter what side you're on? But for me, they can coexist, because I've seen it. But I also think that it takes a lot for a coach and a therapist to really have the client's best interest at heart, or patient's best interest at heart, to be able to say, I think it's time, like, again, my capacity is here. I think it's time to, you know, go search out a different conversation, if you want to put it that. What's your take on this?
So definitely a red flag if someone in the helping world is pushing for you to save, right? We should trust our clients' capacities and their financial ability to stick to, you know, therapy or coaching. And for me, sometimes clients will have to take a break because of finances, and I'll do my best to either, you know, find them access to maybe a group where they can do group therapy and pay less, or maybe I'll provide them with some tools and homework for them to do during this break. I think that they can absolutely coexist. Accountability coaches and therapists, I think if I could have both, I would, because a lot of the change that happens in therapy, it's really hard to do on your own. And so if you were to have an accountability coach that's helping you to do, let's say the self-care that you discuss with your therapist doesn't have time, or it's not part of their regimen to check in with you outside of your sessions. It's just, that one-time session, and then we're counting on you to do what you can outside of it. If you come back and you're like, I didn't do any of it, that's okay. That's to be expected in therapy. Changing your behaviors is very hard. And so if there's a team of folks that have your best interests and want to see you succeed, great. And so in therapy, I could do more of, like, for example, when you were saying you have a hard time asking for help. In therapy, we might kind of assess, well, where did you learn that? What beliefs did you grow up around a man asking for help? And kind of rewiring that in your body and mind so those beliefs aren't permanent anymore. And you can assess and decide, well, everyone needs help. And yes, I could do it without help, but do I have to? Do I want to? It's actually great to have community. It's great to be able to not be in isolation. And we learn a lot from others went through our interactions. And so while on the accountability coach piece, you could be helping this person with actually taking the steps like, okay, so how did you ask someone for help this week? How did that feel? Where else can we do that, right? We might do that in therapy too, but if we can have double the support and accountability, that's going to be really, really helpful for the client.
I'm glad you brought that one tidbit of when I said, right, that I struggle with it. So I asked my dad. I actually went to my dad and I was like, I struggle with asking for help. Is it something that I saw maybe with you, or is it, because I never saw you asking for help. And that was my own optical, I don't want to say illusion, right? But it's like the way I feel and think about my dad is he's Superman. So growing up, I never saw him asking for help. And then once he was like, yeah, I remember so and so would come over and this and that, and it's like, wait a minute. I excluded that because of what I believe and the love and the respect I have for my dad and the way I saw him, right? That I actually removed those memories from my memory storage to where I never, because I never actually heard him or saw him physically saying, I need help, I registered it as, oh, he just never asked for help. But yet there was always help. And there was always men, there was always people around, there was always, whether it's from the church or family members or even just friends, there were always around. And he's like, how do you think that happened? They didn't just show up, but again, it's funny how for a long time, I had never registered it as, well, I'm not going to ask for help because my dad never asked for help. That never crossed my mind. Right? It was just, this is the way I am, and I'm going to handle it. And once you peel back the layers, then you come back to, well, that was your own take on what you remember, but that's actually not what happened. Right? Because now we have all the details behind what you saw, and there was a lot of things that you didn't see. First off, I was a kid. I wasn't always around. Right? I wasn't always around to hear these conversations. I would take what I would see, and again, from what I believe and the respect and the love I have for my dad, and believing that he's Superman, that I was like he never asked for help, and it was funny because when I was asking, he's like, the same thing with my grandpa. You don't think grandpa ever asked for help? Like, we were always over there. He would call me up, and I'd go over there and help him. Why do you think you're always around us? And so I think it's very important, right, that this comes from conversations. If that conversation would have never come up, I would have never stated that, well, I don't ask for help because my dad didn't ask for help. If that conversation would have never come up, I would have never been able to connect the pieces and understand that I can still have the same love and respect for my dad. I don't love him any less because now I know he asked for help. Like, I don't think he's not Superman because now I know he asked for help. But I think it's very important, right, that we have those discussions in that space, to have those discussions that we can say, you know what? Maybe it was my own take on how this happened, but I've taken that to heart so deeply that now it's affected how I'm behaving now. And, the fear of passing that on to my son, that there have been times where I'm like, hey, Papa, do you need help? No, I'm okay. And then, yeah, part of me maybe just wanted to do it faster. The fear of like, wait, is he going to take that as like, well, now I can't ask for help because my dad doesn't need help. right? So I think it's just a very, you know, I wanted to share that because it's a very telling piece for my own story, right, of how I assumed certain things without knowing the full story. And I think a lot of people can relate to that.
You absolutely nailed it. I think that that is why therapy is so important, because when we are kids, we make a lot of assumptions. Mm. We are starting our lives. And so, for example, if I have a mother that every time, let's say I'm 6 years old, I come home from school and I want to show her my art, I want to play with her. And every time I come home, she's in her room, locked in there. If I try to peek in there, she curses me out and says, leave me alone.
Right.
I don't have time for you right now. This child that is barely learning about life is going to make the assumption, ooh, I really upset mom. She does not like having me around. And if we were to, as an adult, assess what's going on, we might be able to see she's going through something with my dad. She's really stressed about finances. But kids always make everything about themselves. That's just what kids do. They don't have all these extra layers of information and insight yet. That's what parents are for, to teach them about life. And so as children, we make a lot of assumptions and have a lot of beliefs about why things happen. Usually it's our fault as children, is what we think. You know, oh, so-and-so teacher didn't let us stay out at recess extra long because I took too long to eat my lunch. Mm. No, the teacher just that day wasn't able to bend the rules, I guess, and had nothing to do with that.
Right.
And so I think it's really important to assess why we think the way we do and where we got that. You know, I think you proved that in your story. You as a child just witnessed your dad never actually asking for help. Mm-hmm. Yes, you'd see people come around, but you didn't see the connecting pieces. And so for all you know, these people were just willing candidates that would, you know, stop by and say like, hey, do you need help fixing this, this, and that? Do you need help with these errands? But you never saw those connecting pieces. And so you develop this belief of, I love my dad. I think he's amazing. And I've never seen him ask for help. If you want to be a person like that, you don't ask for help.
Right, right.
A great story that you shared, because I think it really helps people grasp why it's important to go to therapy and understand why we are the way we are and what made us that way. And then to decide, do I want to remain this way? Because nothing's permanent. And we can change our behaviors, and we can change our decision making, and we can impact our beliefs about ourselves.
And that's huge, right? Because, you know, there's always the, well, I've been like this for so long. And then again, there's this limiting belief of, well, there's no way I can change now, right? There's no way, you know, I'm you know, someone that's 50 or 60 years old. And I've experienced it with some clients where age doesn't matter, right? It obviously, I think the first component is that someone has to be, one, all in, like you said, right? You have to be open. You have to be willing to peel back some of the layers. Like, if you really want to get to the bottom of whatever it is that you're struggling with, or whatever beliefs you think you have of yourself, there has to be this space of vulnerability that comes into play where you can't hold back, right? Because it's difficult to help someone when you only have 60-70% of the story. And then, you know, I've heard of clients that have come on with me that have maybe been with another coach before, and in their understanding, like, as we've opened up and shared things, you know, they were like, and I've asked them, like, well, did you share that with the coach before? And they were like, well, no, I just didn't think it was important. And it's like, and then can we really blame the coach, or can we really blame the therapist? Right? Because they didn't have all the information. So you left that program thinking that, you know, it wasn't for you, or it wasn't helping you out, when in reality, you didn't open up the way you needed to. And now, I'm not saying that if you did, it would have changed the result, but it's a very important component of therapy. It's a very important component of coaching, to be able to be vulnerable enough. And that's where, like you said early on, the trust and the respect, right? And so many people ask me, like, how do clients, like, open up to you? How do clients, you know, share so much? And it's that respect and that trust that I really do care, just like you, right? We really do care about their success. We really do care. And more importantly, we are keen to and understand that, you know, at any given time, if I feel like I'm not the right one, I will tell you about that, right? I'm not going to string you along just to string you along. And I think that's one very important component where it enables the coach, I mean, the client or the patient to be able to say, okay, I feel safe. And I know, you know, for you and when you do more of on the clinical side of things, it's got to be rewarding when you see that client that finally opens up, and not so much because you want them, you know, to relive those moments, but because you know that that's that point where things are going to start changing when they finally open up at that point.
Yeah. And, you know, as a therapist, it's very easy to hear people's problems and say, well, do this, do that. But I don't do that. I want people to find those answers within learning to understand their own emotions and behaviors. And so, you know, I'm a therapist myself, and I've been in therapy before where, yeah, I was honest and transparent, but there was definitely some topics that I did not want to go into yet. My heart and soul weren't ready to unpack such things.
Right.
And so I could cry about this and that, but I was not going to get close to certain topics.
Right.
Therapists will respect that. They understand that there's levels to this and that you need to be ready to embark certain journeys. And the other piece is, I hope that people understand that therapy takes time. You know, people often take so long to ask for help and get therapy that once they do, they're like desperate and ready to feel better. And so they're like, I don't get it. I've gone to 5 sessions. I feel the same.
Right.
We're still trying to map out and understand your whole chemistry of your brain and your decisions and your relationships. And maybe you don't even realize that certain relationships are impacting you negatively. So you haven't even brought that up.
Right.
But it's similar to physical health. If you get a physical trainer, you are not going to have a 6-pack at the end of the month.
Right. Right.
You know, there's a lot of work that you have to do on your own. There's nutrition. And so it's going to be something like physical health where you always have to be paying attention to it, caring for it in order for things to progress. And so that's what I really try to explain to my clients, that this is going to be a process that looks different for everyone. And it might go at a different speed. And please share with me what you think as we go along. If you have questions, especially if this is your first time in therapy, please ask them.
Right.
I'm here to answer all of them. And I think that it's just so, so beneficial. I remember having this one man that came to therapy. Him and his wife had just had a child. And after the first session, when he came back for the second one, he told me, it was so weird. I told my wife, I felt so much relief after that. And I was just sharing with you, like, what's been going on, why I feel this way. We haven't even done anything, but wow, that just took so much weight off my shoulders.
Right. And it's just a conversation.
It makes a difference.
Right. Yeah. I think I think the expectations, obviously having the expectations, having that conversation, I'm always clear with my clients that, look, it's not a one size fits all. Definitely, you know, some people find, you know, whatever your definition of success within is, but some people find it sooner than others. There's actually been people that find what I call kind of like a false sense of success. And then all of a sudden they trip up again and they don't understand why. And then we have to have that conversation, right? That it's like, well, you actually hadn't gone through the entire process just yet. Like that was just now. We take it, right, and kind of using your analogy with, you know, with physical stuff like training, right? It's like if you're going to look at the scale every day, you're going to drive yourself crazy. And now, because one day you could be two pounds down, and then the next day you're up a pound, and now you're like, wait, what? And it's like that really could have had nothing to do with what you're actually doing. It's just your body reacting to it, and there was nothing you could have done for that. But in that same sense, we need to be aware of the fact that it is a process. That if someone is dealing or has been dealing with something for 15, 20, 25 years, do the math. Like it's not going to happen in a month. It's not going to happen in 5 sessions, like you mentioned. But there does definitely have to be something to where a client can walk away with, I'm working on it. And that's what I always tell my clients, right? It's like, look, you're actively working on it. And as long as you're doing these things that you've set out to do for yourself, and as long as you're checking these boxes, and whatever routine or discipline it is that you're trying to build, as long as you're doing that, you can rest assured that you're doing the best you can. And we'll have those discussions when it's like, man, I've been doing this for 2 months and I still don't feel like I'm getting ahead. And it's very simple because then it's, you know, I feel my responsibility to go back and say, well, it's funny you say that because when we first started talking, even your vocabulary has changed. Right? Like before, it was all about I can't, I failed, I'm frustrated, I have anxiety, all these things. And all of a sudden we fast forward and yeah, you in physical sense, you haven't made a lot of leaps and bounds. But like if we were to record these sessions, I could replay these and tell me when you use the word frustrated. Tell me when you use the word that you failed or you feel like a failure. And even those are big wins, but we lose sight of them when we're only focusing on that one specific goal and we don't see like the big picture, which I'm assuming in therapy is the very similar thing. That it doesn't have to be these leaps and bounds, that it's just these small little things that happen that say, that make you, once you finish a session, you can say, oh, they're actually going in the right direction.
And even when you, if you were to stop therapy, mm-hmm. even when that happens, things are not permanent. Just right. like if you ignore your physical health for 6 months, you might have less endurance. You might have gained 5 pounds. Mm-hmm. Your cholesterol might start shooting up. You are never exempt from working on your mental health
right.
unless you want to pay the cost. And right. so after therapy, it's important to continue to assess our emotions and mm-hmm. our behaviors, patterns. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a client who I had her download an app to start tracking her emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, I think like 3 weeks, she's like, I stopped tracking them because I notice I'm always anxious with either happy or mad, but there's always an anxious element. And she stopped tracking because of that. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, what do you think about the fact that there's always an anxious element? And she realized, I never realized I'm this highly anxious and that I always kind of run on this side of anxiety.
Wow.
And so if we know this, you know, she thought that the app, you know, I told her download it, we can assess patterns with your emotions. Oh, when I hang out with this friend, my emotions are crap. When I go to work, when I get fresh air, mm-hmm. I feel better that time. Mm-hmm. And you can decide if you check in with your emotion on the app twice a day, 3 times a day. And so it's really cool to assess these patterns. And she felt, well, I stopped doing it because I didn't, you know, see right. a pattern. There was no point, but there was a pattern.
Mm.
And it was that she's way more anxious than she usually is.
Wow.
And when I asked her, do you remember being this way as a kid? She said, yeah, I was always so worried. I'd hear my parents talking about bills and I would always be worried there wouldn't be enough money. Mm-hmm. I would be worried that we were eating too much. How old were you? I was 6. Wow. So you were thinking about adult responsibilities when you're just supposed to be coloring and having fun.
Right, right.
Parents didn't have bad intentions when they weren't being secretive about these financial issues, but that is too much for a child to grasp. And so that child decided, okay, I'm going to try to, you know, create as little amount of problems, use as little as much, and always kind of live on this line of fear of, ooh, are we going to be evicted any minute now? Because mom and dad seem stressed. And if they're stressed, the people that are supposed to, you know, keep it together and take care of us, I should be stressed.
Right. Like I said early on, it's a broad subject and definitely want to have you on again, or maybe kind of pinpoint specific things and more points, maybe a little bit deeper, or, you know, how one can navigate certain situations. Like I mentioned early on in our conversation, you know, I put up a thing on story on Instagram and people responded, and there was a lot of feedback when it came to mental health and just questions that people had specifically for some specific situations. So maybe what we can do is we can, you know, we'll talk and program another one and dive a little deeper into that one subject. But again, thank you for being on, and I'm excited to continue the conversation, and I'm excited to hear obviously how your business continues and the impact that you're making in that world.
I appreciate it. I enjoyed our time together, and I agree, there's just so much knowledge and information for people to take away from mental health, and it'll only benefit folks. And so I think more content about mental health and how to work with it is only gonna do people good.